When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome to the Natural Healing Show. Keep it natural. Be the Natural Healing Show.
Hello, you are listening to the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Catherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer, Amazon number one best-selling author. You can find out more about me and my work at CatherineKerrigan.com and UnlimitedEnergyNow.com. While you're there, definitely sign up for my newsletter so you can heal yourself naturally. Now, our guest today is Susie Amendola. Susie Amendola is a yoga teacher of 45 years. I've only taught yoga 31 years. So you're going to be hearing from two yoga teachers here today. Susie Amendola is the author of the new book, The Centered Heart, Evidence-Based Mind-Body Practices to Stress Less and Improve Cardiac Health. And Susie Amendola is the founder of Yoga Now and has been the national director and senior trainer of stress management for Ornish Lifestyle Medicine. Welcome, Susie Amendola.
Thank you, Catherine. It's wonderful to be here. So nice to be with you.
And everyone can find out more about Susie Amendola and her wonderful work at two websites, yourcenteredheart.com and doyoganow.com. And I believe on one of your websites, you have an online training program where people can learn yoga practices to heal their heart, right?
I do have an online training program. Yes, thank you.
So Susie Amendola, as you know, heart disease is one of the leading killers around the world. So people have high blood pressure, they have congestive heart failure, and many other issues that affect our heart, high blood pressure especially. So many people know that we need to exercise. Why is yoga especially beneficial for our heart?
Well, yoga offers so many tools that can be really helpful and actually time-tested evidence-based tools that can actually help to not only stop the progression of disease, but when integrated with other lifestyle modalities, they can actually stop and reverse disease.
Now, Susie Amendola, you have been the national director and senior trainer of stress management for Ornish Lifestyle Medicine. So Dr. Dean Ornish is a world-recognized expert in reversing heart disease. Can you explain for our audience, can you just give a brief overview of what the Ornish Lifestyle Medicine program is for heart disease?
Well, it's a program that involves actually four modalities, and those modalities are exercise, and it's moderate exercise, just to, you know, something that you like walking, swimming, dancing. It's moderate exercise, so it's an hour three times a week, or it's a half an hour a day. And then it also includes nutrition. And the diet recommended for reversing heart disease is really a vegan, but it's a vegetarian diet that has some egg white, maybe some non-fat yogurt, but mostly a vegan, low-fat, plant-based diet. And people often think that the diet's going to be the hardest part to adhere to, but actually, over time, it really becomes one of the easier parts once you get that down. The third modality is one called group support, and it's really about learning to listen with compassion to other people's feelings. So it's like learning to hold space. And I, in my book, even talk about this element of compassion being a really important part of stress management, too. And then the last part is stress management. And that's the part that I was asked to come in and teach. And that actually has four, excuse me, five parts to the stress management. The first being gentle movement, the next being relaxation, meditation, breathing, and imagery. And together, those five pieces form the stress management program, and they create a really powerful healing path.
Fantastic. Now, you have trained with Dr. Dean Ornish, but then you wrote your own book, The Centered Heart. So, what inspired you to write this book?
Well, the inspiration really came when I was working in Dr. Ornish's program, and I observed how the practices of yoga, including all of the ones I talked about, the movements and breathing, relaxation, meditation, imagery, how they had such a profound impact on people's stress levels and then in turn on their healing. So I noticed that stress was really a major contributor in all chronic illness. So when I realized that, I thought, wow, most of us hear that we need to do something about stress, but we don't know what to do. And often when I ask people, what are you doing for stress management? They say things like, well, I knit, or I read, or I take a hike, or I drink, which isn't a very good option. But I think those are nice options and they can reduce stress, but they don't work in the same way that these yoga practices work, which actually help to address nervous system resilience, and they help us to become, they change our mindset. So they really do have a much different kind of effect, and the effect is internal rather than external. So the practice is an internal practice.
So, Susie Amendola, what is the connection between our nervous system and our heart health?
Well, the nervous system is really regulates, it's crucial for both mental and physical health because it's the body's command center. So it coordinates everything from basic functions to complex processes like thinking and emotional responses. So a well-regulated nervous system promotes better stress resilience, better emotional balance, cognitive function, sleep quality, and ultimately it leads to overall improved health and well-being. And we have, may I just say this, Catherine? We have two parts to the nervous system. We have the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. And the sympathetic is the fight or flight response. And the parasympathetic is really the relaxation response or the rest and digest part of the nervous system. And the sympathetic nervous system is always turned on so that we can respond to our environment when there's an emergency. But the parasympathetic nervous system is not. It really requires our ability to switch. Which we call nervous system resilience. So the practices that we work with or that I'm talking about in the book are really practices from traditional yoga and that they're evidence-based, but they're the ones that help us make that shift from the sympathetic fight or flight to the parasympathetic rest and digest.
I so appreciate you explaining the two sides of the nervous system for our audience because, as a medical intuitive healer, when I do medical intuitive readings, one of the most common things that I find in my clients is that people are stuck in the sympathetic side of their nervous system. So people may know, gee, I need to relax, but they are so overstressed and they're tired, but they're wired, but tired. And they can't relax because they're stuck in the sympathetic side of the nervous system. So their nervous system has lost balance. And then when people have chronic illness, such as fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue syndrome, they've been so stressed for so long, or congestive heart failure, they've been stressed for so long, they then go into a parasympathetic nervous system collapse. Why is it so critical that we balance the two sides of our nervous system?
Well, I think that healing can't happen unless we are in our parasympathetic nervous system. So it's really important that we find balance between the two, or we will do exactly what you say is we'll sort of go into a crash. I call it like an adrenal crash, like we just can't function anymore. And so I think that paying attention to that and trying to figure out how to bring balance, it's really the key to all healing in some ways. There's a practice in yoga and that I talk about in my book that's called alternate nostril breathing. And the breath is so intimately connected to the nervous system that this breathing practice helps us learn to sort of naturally shift between the two sides because our right, we have a right nostril breath that connect, it's connected to our sympathetic nervous system. And we have a left nostril breath that's connected to the parasympathetic nervous system. And, you know, if we stay in one side too long, we break balance and we become unhealthy. So this practice is used for just about everyone in my own personal yoga therapy practice. And I know, Catherine, you probably use it in yours because it brings balance to the nervous system and then people can heal.
I love that you bring up alternate nostril breathing. One of my 10 books is called The Little Book of Breath Work, and it includes an 8-minute breathing routine and also hand mudras that help to balance your nervous system. So, what yoga practices help us balance the two sides of our nervous system? So, you started by explaining alternate nostril breathing, okay? Which you, if you go to YouTube and look up Catherine Kerrigan, you can find a video that'll teach you how to do alternate nostril breathing. So what other yoga practices can help us balance the two sides of our nervous system?
Well, the five that I talked about that we use in the Ornish program are actually do that. And I added two in my book, but I'll just say a little bit about them. Can I just say a little bit about each of the practices?
I was going to ask you that. Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, gentle movement can help to balance the nervous system. I think when a lot of us look at movement in yoga, we see this fast movement or these movements that people say, I can't do that. I'm not bendy. I'm not this. But if they're done slowly and they're done within the context of healing, they're not these bendy poses. It's not Simon Says. It's really about listening. Doing postures or gentle movement is about listening to what the body is telling you. And I say this all the time that disease knocks three times, but when we don't listen, it takes us. And so doing these gentle movements help us listen. They help us move into the spaces of body, which, by the way, if we have any trauma, which everybody does, we exit our body when we're in trauma. We leave, and often we leave pieces of ourselves in our traumas. And so, doing these gentle movements help us come back, and we can start to balance. We can balance inside of us when we start to look and pay close attention. So, the gentle movements are one that help us come back into balance, and they help the nervous system, and especially when they're done slowly and when they're done with the breath. Another one is breathing itself, which I talked about already. But one thing that I didn't say is that the inhale breath is stimulates our sympathetic nervous system, our fight and flight, and the exhale, our parasympathetic nervous system. So just breathing slower, spending more time with the exhale breath will help us switch back into the parasympathetic. Even sighing, I really teach as part of my yoga teaching, I teach people to sigh in between practices so they can help upregulate. So they'll do a pose, they'll come back and they'll go, ah. And that's sort of a simple way to upregulate that parasympathetic response and switch. Another practice is relaxation. And people do all kinds of things to relax, but systematic relaxation relaxes the body and the mind deeper than sleep, even. And people often, you know, sleep is really one of the only ways we know how to relax. And sometimes sleep isn't that relaxing. And there's a lot of studies out right now about sleep and how we repair and restore ourselves in sleep. And most of us aren't sleeping. And if we are, we're not sleeping well. So deep relaxation allows us to drop very deeply into a state where everything is resting. And when we're in that state where we've moved to this parasympathetic nervous system. So that's another way we can switch is just daily practice of deep relaxation. And then another practice that I outline is imagery. And I know you'll love this one because I'm sure you use it with your clients all the time. And I think It's something that people often say, I don't know how to use imagery. And I'll always say to them, well, have you ever worried any at all about anything ever? And of course, people will say, of course, I worry all the time. Well, worry is imagery. And we're creating images when we worry. It's just not necessarily the most healthy form of imagery. But if we can worry and make changes, and I talk about this all the time. When my daughter was young, she was learning to drive, and I would imagine the worst possible outcome. And what would happen in the 3 minutes that I would imagine that is my heart would race, my palms would sweat, my mouth would dry out, and I had adrenaline rushing through my body. And that was just by thinking about a terrible outcome. Imagine if we could think about a positive outcome, what it could do in terms of healing. So imagery is a very powerful way to heal, a very powerful way to switch the sides of the nervous system. Sometimes I'll just say to people when they're anxious, think about a place in nature that you love and just imagine planting yourself there for a few minutes and just notice the sounds that you hear and the smells in the air and the things that you see around you. And immediately that sort of shifts the nervous system. Immediately it shifts. So imagery is another one. Meditation. And meditation is a really, really powerful practice. In fact, all of yoga, you know, when people say yoga, I always hear them say, and you probably get annoyed by this too, Catherine. People say, we're going to do yoga and meditation. And I'm thinking, well, yoga is meditation, actually translates, and every single practice in yoga is delivering you to the doorstep of meditation. So meditation is like the culmination of these practices for concentration, for bringing the mind to one place and letting it rest there. And then letting everything in the mind come and go, letting thoughts arise and dissipate. I'll say it's like, you know, the snow in a snow globe just dropping to the bottom. That's how thoughts are in meditation. They just sink. And then the mind gets clearer, the snow globe gets clearer, and we get more present with that. So that practice alone allows us to change our mindset, allows us to shift, to be able to witness thought from a detached perspective, not always being in the thick of it, not always responding. And it's our responses that cause stress, not the stress. It's our response to stress that creates the issue. So when we're changing our responses, which we are doing in meditation, this is putting us well on the road to health and healing. Well on the road to switching our nervous system dominance and having nervous system resilience.
And with that, let's take a break and listen to a message from one of our commercial sponsors here at UK Health Radio. My name is Catherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer, Amazon number one bestselling author, also taught yoga for 31 years. We're listening to Susie Amendola, author of The Centered Heart, and we're learning about how yoga can help heal your heart. We'll be right back.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Radio. UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Susie Amendola, you talked about how exercise is one of the four pillars of the Dean Ornish Lifestyle Medicine Program. And people listening will say there's all kinds of exercise. And if you talk to an exercise scientist, they talk about zone one, zone two, zone three, zone four, and zone five cardio. And most yoga practices are in sort of the yoga zone two cardio. So it's basically easy, mild exercise. Why is yoga different from other forms of exercise in as far as healing yoga, as far as healing heart disease?
I love that question, Catherine. Thank you for asking that. You know, a lot of times people do come to our program, have come to our program doing a lot of yoga, but doing very cardiac yoga. And they want to know, can they use it as their yoga practice for the program? Because we ask them to do an hour a day of yoga and a half hour of exercise. And not only do they want to combine it, but they want to know if they can use yoga for exercise. And what we do say is keep doing the yoga that you love. But the way that we're going to practice is a different kind of yoga. And it's a yoga that is really about slow flow, slow yoga, bringing more awareness to your movement and doing it in such a way that you are regulating the nervous system and building resilience. So they're very different. And in some ways, that sort of high intensity yoga is a little more like what I call Simon Says yoga. It's where the teacher tells you what to do, and it's all from an external locus of control. You're doing what you're being told from outside of you. Whereas this yoga is about listening, deeply tuning in, and following the intuition of your own body and mind, your own heart. And so they're very different in the nature of how they affect the body and the mind. And so we usually will say to people, do your yoga maybe as your exercise, the one that you like, that fast yoga, but then do this as your stress management. And that's how I differentiate the two. And I think that there's nothing wrong with doing yoga for exercise, but it's a very different focus, and it's a very, very different kind of yoga. And at different times in our lives, we need different things. But if someone has disease process or chronic illness, the kind of yoga that's more helpful is this internal kind of healing yoga.
Great information. And I would add to that an understanding of the hormonal aspect of exercise. So, anytime you get your heart rate over 100 beats a minute, your body has to secrete the stress hormones adrenaline and cortisol. Now, cortisol is the most destructive hormone in the body. It breaks down your hair, your brain chemistry, your bones, and adrenaline is the same as the hormone that you release if you were going to, for example, take a lot of cocaine, which of course we never recommend. But basically, when you're over-adrenalized, you're just running on fumes. So when you do exercise such as jogging or running, most people, their heart rate is over 100 beats a minute. You're releasing adrenaline and cortisol, which actually break things down. And when
I
you're
love that.
practicing most yoga, the kind of yoga that we're talking about here, that's therapeutic for your heart rate is usually below 100 beats a minute. Now, Susie and Mandela, are there any yoga poses that you find are especially beneficial for healing your heart?
Yes, there are several, and we actually use them. And I think that one that comes to mind that I think is really helpful is a practice, and it's a very therapeutic version of shoulder stand. I know people don't think of shoulder stand as being something maybe therapeutic for the heart, but when it's done with props and pillows and chairs, it can be incredibly therapeutic. And I'll just describe what that might look like. But it would be lying on the floor, putting your legs up on a chair, and putting a pillow, like a bed pillow, under your buttocks and another bed pillow under your head. And then I'm going to talk about why that's therapeutic and why that helps the heart. So when your legs are up on a chair like that, it starts to bring the flow of blood or energy back towards the abdomen, towards the hips and abdomen. And it can be really helpful for sort of draining the lymph and doing all those things as well. But the reason it's good for heart disease is because it creates a pool or two pools. The first is the pool in the abdomen. And when you put a pillow under the buttocks, it lifts that pool of blood and energy and pours it towards the carotid arteries, which are in the neck. Those are the receptors. They're the ones that tell the brain that the heart has enough blood, it doesn't need to pump so much. So it lowers heart rate immediately. So when the head is on a pillow and the chin's down a little, it just lets the blood pool right here in the carotid arteries, and the heart rate and the blood pressure start to lower. And I think that's a very quick way to shift from sympathetic to parasympathetic. And it's a very healing practice because it also, like I said, drains the lymph, brings blood flow to the back and the internal organs, brings blood flow to the brain. Even though the chin's down, there's still blood flow in the brain, the thyroid, which is, you talked about, the master gland, the hormone regulator. So it's really an overall kind of restorative kind of practice. And so we usually encourage people with any chronic illness, but particularly heart disease, to rest that way for 1 to 5 minutes once or twice a day. Just put your legs up, put a little pillow under each, the buttocks and the head, and just let yourself relax. And another thing that I'll do while people are lying there is I'll invite them to tune into their heart and just be present there. Just imagine themselves breathing as if their heart were breathing. And also tuning in with a sense of humility as you ask your heart, which is the seat of your intuition, the seat of your inner wisdom, the seat of your inner healer, to just ask your heart if there's something that it needs. If there's something it needs from you in the form of healing, maybe it's an image, maybe it's something you need to be doing. But if you ask with a sense of humility and you listen with that same sense of reverence and humility, the heart usually answers. And even if it doesn't answer, because it answers in funny ways, you might notice later on in the day that you're in the right place at the right time and you're with the right people, and life seems to be flowing with ease and grace. This is what happens when we align with our intuition and our inner healer, with our own inner wisdom, that we begin to get answers right when we need them. We begin to have answers to our questions. But it just takes a regular practice and a sense of reverence and humility of just asking and listening. So I often do that while people are with their legs resting, so they have something for their mind to do.
Beautiful explanation. And the variation of shoulder stand that you described, I would describe that also as a variation of Viparita Karani, or legs against a wall pose.
Yes, it's exactly that.
Yeah, so I teach that as well, where if all you have is a chair, and just lie on your back, bend your knees, and put your legs on a chair. And as you know, Susie Amendola, many people, their hamstrings are so tight, they have trouble doing a legs against a wall pose. Or legs against wall pose is actually therapeutic for their hamstrings. But if they simply bend their knees and rest the lower legs on the chair, and just the action of lying on your back, bending your knees, and resting your lower legs on the chair, the gentle pressure on your calves helps to lower your blood pressure.
I love that, Catherine.
And the poses that I would add as therapeutic for the heart, again, legs against the wall pose. When you do legs against the wall pose for 7 to 10 minutes, you're going to clear your stress hormones for the day. And then any sort of back bends, camel pose. Many people, full wheel would be the, ultimate expression of that. But bow pose, up dog, right?
Cobra.
Cobra.
Cobra. Yes.
Yes, exactly. Cobra. So all kinds of back bends. So why are back bends therapeutic for the heart?
Well, one of the things that I like to use for that, and I like to have people lay over a bed pillow lengthwise so that their heart is exposed and their arms are out. And I have them breathe like a starfish, like to their starfish limbs to get energy flowing. But the reason that back bends are so helpful is that they open up the pathway between the heart and the arms. And the arms are what carry the action of the heart into the world. They let us give and receive love. And so if that pathway is blocked, and oftentimes when people do have advanced versions of heart disease, they have tightness in their shoulders or even shoulder issues from just holding them so tight, from holding the weight of the world on their shoulders, from clenching and trying to protect their heart. So this gentle movement, I say that, when we do a movement like Cobra over and over again in a gentle way, it's like placing a stone in the river, and placing one stone a day, eventually the river current changes. It goes a different direction. And that's what we're doing by doing a pose like a back bend every day. We're changing the current, the flow of energy in the heart. We're letting it extend out to the arms and fingers. We're letting it move through the shoulders. So it's a very important asana, a very important posture to do daily. And even if you can't do the full version of it, you can do it while you're sitting in a chair by just rolling your shoulders back and just looking up. And that's how I teach it in the book, but just rolling your shoulders, looking up, and then rolling your shoulders, looking down, because also this forward movement opens up the backside of the heart. We don't think of ourselves as having a heart in the back, but all the action is in the back. So it's like we often hide our heartache in the back between the shoulder wings so no one can see it. So like just opening forward and then coming, opening back and then closing forward and just breathing into the backside of the heart can be incredibly therapeutic.
Now, Susie Amendola, you were a senior trainer of stress management at the Ornish Lifestyle Medicine program. How does stress actually lead to heart disease? I'm
That's a
sure you could write a whole book on that subject, right?
Yeah, I mean, you've said a lot of ways, but it really is not the stress, but our reaction to stress. And that, we have acute stress and then we have chronic stress. And we're built for acute stress. We're built like our sympathetic nervous systems are turned on so that if we meet a bear in the woods, we can run, right? But if you keep them on over time, all of that adrenaline and cortisone builds up, and those things affect the heart and eventually damage the heart. And so, in those ways, I mean, those are the ways that you talked about. That's the way that I would connect the two, really.
So, what is the connection between stress and clogged arteries? Can you explain that for our audience?
Well, plaque lays itself down in the arteries. There's people that have a lot of plaque in their arteries and never have a heart attack, which is very interesting. So, in fact, I have someone in my family, my father-in-law, has completely blocked arteries, but has never had a heart attack. And they're, he's 90 and he goes out and plays tennis every day and he builds collaterals playing tennis. And he's a very low stress person. He doesn't respond and react to things. He looks at the best in people. He lets his life flow. And in many, many ways, that's helped him tremendously. It's the aggravation and the inflammation to that plaque that's the problem. And so when you eat a low inflammation diet, which is like a vegan diet is low on the inflammatory index, and talking about your feelings helps to give some place for that energy to go and expand. And doing yoga helps to sort of calm that inflammation. So the plaque in the arteries is part of it, but it's the inflammation that's the big problem.
So great explanation. And I would add to that that the stress when your body is stressed, you release a stress hormone, cortisol, and that signals your body to actually raise cholesterol, which clogs your arteries, right?
Right, exactly. Thank you
You
for
can,
that. That's exactly right.
yes, and you can prick your finger, put a drop of blood under a microscope and look at a person's blood and tell whether or not they're stressed. And when a person is stressed, it actually literally affects your blood. The cell walls in your blood become squiggly. There can be a lot of fat globules floating around. So it literally, stress literally affects the shape of your blood cells. And with that, let's take a break and listen to another message from one of our commercial sponsors here at UK Health Radio. My name is Catherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer, Amazon number one best-selling author, also yoga teacher. Susie Amendola, our guest, is the author of The Centered Heart, and we're talking about how yoga can help heal your heart. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Susie Amendola, on one of your websites, you have an online course on stress management. Can you share with people where they can get this support and what you offer in this stress management program?
Yes. Well, when you buy the book, or even if you pick it up at the library, there's a QR code in the book that leads you to some free practices, some daily practices in these therapeutic tools that we've talked about today. And so if you go to yourcenteredheart.com, you can also find those same tools. And there's a program there that is also a 30-day program for stressing less. It's a program to stress less. And it's 30 days and 30 minutes each day. So it involves doing a few of these practices each day so that you build a sort of toolbox of stress management tools, techniques.
So, Susie Amendola, I remember in my 20s, my first job out of college, I was actually a newspaper reporter, and we had, I think, five di deadlines every day before lunch. And it was very stressful. I started work every day at 5 a.m. and then five deadlines before lunch. It was really ridiculous. And it was at that newspaper that I took my first stress management course. And it was sort of like an aha, like, gosh, I actually am stressed. So, if a person's listening to this broadcast, how can a person tell if their own nervous system is out of balance, if they're stuck in the stress?
Well, I think there's a lot of ways to notice, and you just gave a perfect example. You're running on really on fumes. And I think I always say to people, it's not a good time to practice stress management when you're drowning. You don't want to start swimming lessons as you're drowning. You want to actually start swimming lessons before, so that when you're drowning, you can swim. So I think that even if you're not completely sure that you're at the end of your rope with stress, it's good to start with a self-care stress management practice at any time, so that you'll be a little more resilient when those times come, because we never know what things are going to happen in our life. We just don't have that information. But if we have a sort of daily self-care stress management program, we're going to be able to face those with a little more resilience. And so I think that if people can, I always say, don't try to squeeze yoga or stress management into your life, but rather let your life organize around your yoga, around your stress management practice. And that way, when things happen, you'll have a little bit longer fuse. You'll have a little bit more resilience when the time comes. And how do people know when they're in that place? I think that, illness is one way that people get sick. And, it's sort of like it's a way, our body's way of telling us that things are out of balance. But if we find ourselves sort of, I know that one of the my like triggers is traffic. If I'm screaming at people in traffic, I know I've lost it. I know that I need to go home. And one of the things I have to talk about in my book is developing compassion. If you've lost all compassion, if you feel like you're mad at everybody, or you feel separate from everyone, or everything that everyone does irritates you, that means that you're sort of losing your ability to feel whole and to feel integrated. And I think that having a practice of stress management or yoga practice daily brings us back into the reminder that we are part of something much bigger, and that we have the resources that we need inside of us.
So, Susie Amendola, I'm going to tell a story, and I'm sure this has happened to you at some point in your teaching. I can remember years ago teaching Shavasana, which is that final relaxation at the end of a yoga practice. And one of my students waited until everybody else was gone, and she came up to me and she said, like she was the only one, she said, "I'm thinking during final relaxation." And she felt really bad about that. And many people who hear about meditation, we think, okay, well, meditation is a form of stress management, but they have a really hard time doing it. So you are a stress management trainer. In your many years of experience, what do you find actually works best for the largest group of people in terms of stress management?
You mean what works best to mitigate stress, or what?
Yes, what works the best to mitigate stress?
I think that one of the most important practices that people can do is a relaxation practice every day. I think that we are not sleeping like we used to. We are not relaxing. And I think that seems to be one of the big places. Now, and meditation is another, but I wanted to say something about the story that you told, because it's a story that happens to a lot of us who are stress management specialists. And one of the things that people say to me all the time is, "I can't meditate because my mind won't stop." And I always say to them, "If your mind," I said, "that's a great thing, because if your mind stopped, you wouldn't be here. You'd be dead." Our minds are always moving. And so the idea of meditation is really to either rise above the mind so you can witness and not be so involved, or drop below it. It's either like getting in an airplane and or a hot air balloon and getting way up high, so that everything down below you can kind of watch from a distance, or scuba diving, going down to the bottom of the ocean and just kind of looking up and being able to see, but not being in the thick of it. And so when we're able to do that, when we're able to sort of remove ourselves for a moment and just bear witness, some of those things start to unwind naturally. And I think that that's one of the most important practices, is letting the mind unwind. We can't do it unless we're relaxed. So relaxation often comes first, and then letting the mind just have some time each day where we can unwind and reset. And so a daily meditation practice would be my second answer.
Okay, relaxation and a daily meditation practice. I love that. And I would add to that something, going back to that big picture. And I tell everybody, if you look at your schedule for the day and it just kind of takes your breath away, like, it's Tuesday, how am I going to get this? Then you're doing too much. And, you know, a big advice that I found useful for my own life is only do what you can do with no stress. I'll say that again, only do what you can do with no stress. And that's going to be different for all of us, right? But so many people try and cram something into every moment of every day, and then they're just constantly running from pillar to post, and they're creating the stress because there's no space in their life.
And I think that's a wonderful example and story. And I think that's exactly what happens. And I love that, you know, these practices that you and I are offering out are for creating space. They actually create space. They help you see things differently. So people are saying, I can't fit one more thing in. And that's why we say, well, don't try to fit it in. See if you can organize around it. Make it the number one thing. Right? We wouldn't dream of getting up and not brushing our teeth, or we wouldn't dream of not sleeping at night. We wouldn't dream of not eating. I think the same should be true of our stress management practices so that they can help us create more space.
Wonderful. And a personal tip that I have, and I live in Atlanta, although I've recommended this to clients in the UK, is to have a hammock. And one of my favorite things is just to lie in the hammock and I'm in the sunshine and I listen to the birds and I watch the birds and I watch the trees sway. So having a place, whether it's in your garden or in your home, where you can relax.
What a beautiful, beautiful thing. I had the image of you out rocking in the hammock. And I was thinking that, you know, another stress management tool is being connected to nature and just connected to the elements. You know, we all have those elements inside of us. We have water and earth and air and fire and ether. And when those are in balance, outside of us, they're also in balance inside of us. And when they're in balance inside, they're also in balance outside. So we're always trying to like find a way to connect with nature since we're so much a part of it. You know, it's so important for us to find that. And I think being in a hammock is a perfect way to connect with the elements.
So, Susie Amendola, if someone's listening to this broadcast and they recently were diagnosed with high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, high cholesterol, or any other form of heart disease, where do you think people should begin it to heal their hurt?
Well, I would love to invite them to read The Centered Heart because it really gives you a roadmap for navigating the things that you could do, the ways that you could have more agency in your own healing. And I think that lifestyle changes like dietary changes and exercise and talking about feelings or having a community that you can go to and talk about your feelings. Not everybody has that, but creating that in some way or being that for someone else can be helpful. And then doing this little daily practice of postures or breathing, relaxation, meditation, imagery, those things all will give you a lot more agency in your own healing. And the thing that I'd like to say is that we believe that heart disease is something oftentimes that's genetic, but epigenetics has shown that we have a lot more agency in our own health and healing. And I've seen people start some of these changes that were put in our program. They put them in there on the heart transplant list because there was nowhere else for them to go. And within 6 weeks, they came off the heart transplant list. And this happened over and over again, which means that we have a lot more that we can do in just our lifestyle choices. To help our hearts heal and to reverse the disease.
So, Susie Amendola, you said that one of the major pillars in healing our heart is actually compassion. How does feeling compassion for ourselves and others heal our heart?
Oh, I love that. Well, one of the ways that it helps with stress management is that when we start to feel ourselves separate from others, when we feel like we're not the same. That's when we create this kind of us and them. And when you create us and them, it's so much easier to feel anger and hostility and not understand someone's position. But if we look to people and we look with wonder and openness and we look with compassion, we join them. We join them in a way that we're all human and we're all part of this human family and we're not separate and we're in this together. And there's something so incredibly healing about not feeling separate, about knowing that we are all the same. And, you know, we have different personalities, different thoughts, but at our core, our essence, we are all the same. We are all from the same source. And so once we really operate from that place of compassion, our lives change and they change dramatically. And so I think that I don't even remember your question, Catherine, but I'm just going to say that I think it's an extraordinary tool to have in your toolbox. And it's something that takes practice, that we, you know, we can be trained to be more compassionate by just listening and looking to others in a way that puts us on the same side, the same, puts us in the same realm of being human together.
So Susie Amendola, author of The Centered Heart, any final thoughts for our audience?
Well, I think the only thing, and I've said it already, but I think the final thought might be that each of us has a lot more agency in our healing than we might think. And our inner wisdom, our inner healer are quite powerful if we strengthen them, if we strengthen them. And these practices that we're talking about, they do just that. So I'd love your listeners to just ground into that, that they have a lot of power, sort of like the Wizard of Oz, when the Wizard of Oz says, you know, you had the power all along. And I think that's really true, that their own inner wisdom and intuition, their own inner healer, that's where it's at. And that's where their power is.
Yes. And such a powerful message. And, you know, those of us who've taught yoga for a very long time, we see the power of yoga. And I remember years ago, I had a client with high blood pressure, and she'd done every kind of exercise she could think of. And she came to yoga, and all she did was learn how to breathe. And then she went back to the doctor, and they kept checking her blood pressure, stand up, sit down. And her blood pressure had totally normalized. And the only thing that happened was she learned how to breathe through yoga. So very simple.
So simple. In fact, in our program, people would come in with high blood pressure. And because we were all a team, I taught the nurses how to work with them with alternate nostril breathing and slowing their breath down. And so she would take blood pressures when they come in. If it was high, she'd do some alternate nostril breathing, and she'd take it again and it would be low. Simple.
Very powerful. You've been listening to the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio. My name is Catherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer, Amazon number one best-selling author. You can find out more about me at catherinekerrigan.com and unlimitedenergynow.com. Our guest today has been the wonderful Susie Amendola, author of The Centered Heart. And you can find out more about her stress management program at yourcenteredheart.com and doyoganow.com. And remember, you can heal heart disease naturally, and yoga and having compassion for yourself and others is a huge tool that you can use without drugs. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Natural Healing Show. Keep it natural with the Natural Healing Show.